Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. And listen to the simulcast there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. Download TuneIn in that search engine. The TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for Awakening. And you'll see the icon and you can stream program live on your device, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media, the home base, is out there. It should be one of your favorites. If not, put that in the address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. There you see more interesting content, blogs, podcasts, and programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us and a good friend of Time for Awakening radio program, activist and organizer and founder of the Black Autonomy Network, Banco, Reverend Everett Pinckney, is scheduled to join us this evening in conversation. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother Elliot?
How you feel, sir?
Good day. I'm glad that we're getting to hear from one of the stalwart organizers and believers in what Black people should do, and one who's really paying the price for leadership.
I'm glad to have our friend with us tonight. It's been a long time. The last time we talked to him, he was behind enemy lines. But he's with us tonight, and he's holding on the line. Before we get started this evening, I want to let you know that you can join, you can chat with Time for Awakening. You can ask a question in the chat room. You can make comments that we'll read on the air. You can be involved in the chat room. Just dial, if you're at your computer or your device, handheld device, or your laptop, your tablet, go to uberconference.com. That's uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. uberconference.com/timeforawakening. And in that left-hand corner, you'll the third icon down is the chat room. Just click that button and you can make a comment, ask a question, or just chat with Time for Awakening. That's uberconference.com/timeforawakening, and you'll see the icon on your right, the third one down, if you want to be involved in the chat. Tonight, and I know that the listening audience is out there waiting. Met this man years ago when we went to Restio Radio. Came on, and he really laid it down to our listening audience from Benton Harbor. Utmost respect for activist, organizer, and founder of BANCO, Black Autonomy Network. Reverend Edward Pinckney is with us on the line. Reverend Pinckney.
Yes. Hey, Elliot Booker. Hey, Reverend Pinckney here. Hey, it's an honor to be on your show. I tell you, it's, believe me, it's good to be home, but it's an honor to be able to communicate with you guys. And hey, and I appreciate the work that you're doing.
Reverend Pinckney, you're talking about it's an honor to be on this show. It's an honor to have you. The years I've been knowing you and the guests that you've funneled towards Time for Awakening, and I'm going to go into some of those later on in our conversation. Your work just speaks for itself. I have the utmost respect for you and for what you're doing and what you have done. Mr. McKay was key in helping us communicate with you when you were behind enemy lines, setting up interviews and things of that nature, and he's with us also. I think this is Mr. McKay, are you with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's good to hear you, and it's an honor to be on your program because you're one of the few people who's still out here fighting in our community. You know, we have many of these pseudo-activists, and you can tell the difference in the ones who they're targeting. I think Reverend Pinckney had a show on earlier about TIs, and we know who's targeted and the ones who are not. The ones who are not are allowed to run, walk the streets, and play symphonies and orchestras for them. They entertain them. And the ones who are targeted, they send them to prison, or they take them off the planet. But go ahead. I'll let you get back.
Yeah, that's what we utilize Time for Awakening for, is to get messages out to let our people know what's going on. And they can hear from some of the people that they don't usually get a chance to talk to personally. And myself and Brother Richard, that's the work that we do. Reverend Pinckney, the floor is yours. I want you to talk about, you know, you were released from prison on June 13th. And almost immediately after you had a forced sabbatical from your better half, you were back out here on the grind and doing what you do. Listen, Reverend Pinckney, tell our listening audience about your experience there in prison, the work that you've done. I know it hasn't diminished you not one bit, because as soon as you got out, you're right back into the streets. But talk about your experiences there and how it strengthened your resolve, or how it affected you, period.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me start by saying how I got there, which is probably, you know, I don't want to start in the middle of something. The prison system, being in the prison system, was just in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all started with the recall of the mayor.
Yes.
Benton Harbor James Hightower. He's a puppet for Whirlpool Corporation. And let me throw this in real fast. You know, that London fire that just happened recently, where 79 people was killed, it was a Whirlpool product that started the fire.
Wow.
And they're in hot water. And I think they may be in more hot water than I was in. Let's put it this way. It all depends on which way, how much money they spend. That's what they're going to sell them. But anyway, I was recalling this puppet mayor, James Hightower. He was a puppet for Whirlpool more than anything else. And his job was to keep black people down. We wanted to put an income tax on Whirlpool because they paid no taxes. But if we put an income tax on them, they'd be forced to pay the tax. So they went undercover and used this mayor to go around deceiving the people to make sure it don't happen. So what we did, once it became unsuccessful that we was going to win that battle, because we really didn't have the money. You know, they got all the money in the world to fight stuff like that. And they use other black people. Black people will be used. They could be bought and sold. All you do is buy them lunch. And they will do whatever they want to keep other blacks from being successful, especially a city like Benton Harbor, which is over 90% African American. And we decided to recall this mayor, and it was the right thing to do. And there was really no major benefit for me, you know, but other than, because I live outside of Benton. I live in Benton Township, but it's the idea that the most people don't have the courage. See, that's why I fight. I fight for people who don't have the courage to fight for themselves and their children. And I know they don't. I know us. Only people that we're going to fight is each other. We love fighting each other. And that man got a size 24 shoes stuck all up our butt, and we ain't saying a mumbling word. And it had to be done. The recall was successful and was not successful, because if it was successful, that means that we would get rid of this mayor. And they decided they were going to stop this at all costs. So they sent a SWAT team to my house. Now, any time that you send a SWAT team somewhere, you know the people is there at home. You don't send a SWAT team to someone's house and you don't know whether they're there or not. They sent a SWAT team to my house, and I wasn't even home. My wife, she's never on time. You know, and on this specific day, she was on time. She'd been late like normal. They had me on the ground or shooting or killing me, because to send a SWAT team, you have to have more than just to arrest someone on your mind.
Okay.
And I was taking her out for a dinner. It was her birthday, April 24th. And we was in Kalamazoo, close to Kalamazoo, and the phone was jumping off the hook. They said, they got your house surrounded. My house? Why? You know, you should know that. I said, I don't know nothing about that. Well, what they doing? They looking all in your window, you know. I said, whoa. And so they went all over the city looking for my car. And I went to the attorney office, and he called the prosecutor. He told him that they had charged me with 5 counts of forgery on a recall petition. Now, here in the state of Michigan, there's no such charge as forgery on a recall petition. They made it up just for, they called it the Pinckney Law. So they saw an opportunity, and they took advantage of it. They charged me 5 counts of forgery, 6 counts of letting a person sign a petition twice, which really makes no sense. If a person signed a petition twice and you let them, neither signature is valid. So that doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
So none of it makes any sense. But when it comes to us, they figure they can do anything they want and get away with it. Because most of the time, we're not going to fight that man. We're not going to fight that 24-size shoe in our butt. You know, we rather do something different. That's how they're able to get away with this stuff. So anyway, they bound me over the trial. And on October 27th, which was my birthday, the trial began. Now, here we are. We live in a community. Over 90% of the people here are African-American. We had an all-white jury. How do you get an all-white jury out of this? You see? But they can do what they want to do because we don't do nothing. We sit around and complain all the time. We got to stop all this complaining. And somebody have to take a bullet for the cause. Well, anyway, the trial went on. They produced not a single piece of evidence. None. Absolutely nothing that could have convinced me. Nothing that could have got me arrested. Nothing. Nothing. But unfortunately, this jury, who was motivated by something other than the truth, found me guilty. All 5 counts. Unfortunately. But here's the good news. They rushed me out of the courtroom on sentencing day. This never happened. They sentenced me, and an hour and a half, I was sitting in Jackson Prison, you know, buck naked. And what made it so amazing, they could do this to you, you know, and there's very little you can do about it. And I didn't think for one second that I would be in prison no more than 2-3 months. If you would have told me that the Court of Appeal would not overturn this, I would have laughed in your face because I would say, you don't know nothing. But sure enough, the Court of Appeal overturned this. I mean, didn't overturn it. And they said the reason why, they don't have any evidence to say that I did, but I must have told somebody to do it, which make no sense at all. You know, even if I told them to do it, there was no evidence to say that or anyone saying that. But yet and still, they ruled in favor of the prosecutor. So I had to do the whole 30 months.
Reverend Pinckney.
I made the 30 months good months, you see. I knew that they was out to get me. I knew that they was going to do bodily harm to me. I knew that they was, you know, but I had the ups on them. I'm used to these folks. I know who, see, bad people do bad things. You know, we can't say, you know, sometimes black people want to put white people up on a pedestal. You know, they put their pants on one leg at a time just like I do, you see. But I knew that they was out to get me. I knew the word came from Barron County. We want you to get him. We want you to make sure that he don't leave that prison at all costs. And here's the first example. They put me in a room, a control location that was molded. And it was heavily molded because it made me sick. I had lost 25 to 30 pounds. I was getting weaker every day. But when I went to the doctor, my blood pressure was so high that she said, I'm surprised you haven't had a stroke. But here's the thing, she didn't give me any medication. You know, if I almost had a stroke, my blood pressure was high, where's the medication then? I'm willing to take it now. my sugar was almost 500. No medication or nothing. So I said, I'm not going to die here. This guy, one of the COs tried to bump my shoulder. They would have charged me with assault if my arm would have touched him or something like that, even though he initiated it. If my arm would have touched him, they would have charged me with assault. He had his hand on his taser, and he told me. I jumped up against the wall, and he said, I almost got you, didn't I? I said, no, that'll never happen again. I said, I was weak. My mind wasn't, I really wasn't really in control of my mind at that time. But here's the good news. One of the things I always do is read my Bible early in the morning. And these kids, a lot of little kids, they like that rap music. And I'm not a rapper, I care not to listen to that music. And during the process, the kids, they talk loud with the rap, that's bad. And I'm reading my Bible. So one morning, one of the young guys came up to me and asked me, would I help him with his math? Knowing us, we at black folks, when we don't like you, we don't mess with you. We don't talk to you. And we definitely ain't gonna do nothing to help you. That's us. But I said, yeah, I'll help you. I told him. I sat down with him, and he wanted to know really all about math. I took him all the way back to the basics. Add, subtracted, multiplication, division. I showed him how to multiply and divide at the same identical time. And he was fascinated. He had learned something that the rest of the kids didn't know. I call them kids because they was kids under me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. And here's the thing. We would, I would study with them. Then finally 3 came, 4 came, 5 came, 10 came. Now it's up to 16 of them. And I got an opportunity not only to teach them math, but to teach them black history.
Okay.
You see, that was the program. See, a lot of times, you want to teach them. If you're interested in one thing, you can get them interested in other things. And that's what I did. I told them about Martin Luther King. I had that book, Death of a King. That was one of the greatest books that you would ever read about Martin Luther King. It told the true story how people hated him for being active. Black folks hated him. They hated his guts. And when he died, they all claimed they loved him. And it told a truthful story. And I would teach them on it. Every day, I let them read it. And here's the thing. I would read chapters, the whole chapter to them, you see. And they was fascinated over there. But also, here's something that's really, really important that people may not really understand or realize. See, they was my protectors. They would guard my control area and make sure these CEOs did not put a shank in my control area, did not put drugs in my control area, did not do anything that would keep me inside the prison system. They did all this for me. You see, because here's the thing. They had already cut off my phone privileges. They cut them off for 180 days. Then they went after my visit so they can kind of like isolate me from the rest of the world. A guy named David Soul flew up from Detroit to see me, and, he was taking notes and stuff like that. They wanted his notes. When he got ready to leave, he wasn't too friendly about giving up his note, but he let him make copies of it. They had me arrested and taken to the hold. Now, I'm in prison. Now, think about this. And they rearrest me in prison. Man, that's the most unheard of thing I ever heard of. And they took me, they call it the hold. They took me to the hold, put me in a hold, shackled all up and stuff like that. Now, I'm a real, real convict now. I'm the real deal now. I'm with Frank Nitti and all them other guys now. I got a reputation now. That, Pinckney, they took him to the hole, the reverend. And all the kids, they were, they didn't like it, because they was, like, making sure that nothing happened to me while I was in the hole. And just one day, and here's another thing, the Northern Michigan University was outside picking in the prison. That's right. This had never been done in the history of mankind where someone picked the Marquette prison, 500 miles from my hometown. 500 miles, and you got guys out there picking white folks. white folks was out there picketing in the cold. It was amazing. So finally, they got the report. They said the reason why they took me to the hole, I was smuggling. I was smuggling. I don't know how to smuggle. He said, you were smuggling. He's supposed to have been smuggling, but they couldn't spell smuggling, so okay. He was smuggling. Okay. They put the O's in there. And it was so, so ridiculous. And but here's this. When I went to see they call him the judge, but he's a hearing officer. I told him, my exact words to him, you got to dismiss this. And he said, why? I said, because I don't know how to smuggle. He said, smuggle? He was in shock. I said, yeah, this ain't how you spell smuggling. This is smuggling. Smuggling. I said, yeah. But then he dropped a bomb on me. He told me, I don't care nothing about no evidence. I rule on how I feel.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is what I told him. I said, you look like you feel pretty good today. He said, matter of fact, I do. At 4:30 that day, he came back not guilty. Broke up the whole system. They could not believe that he had ruled in my favor.
Reverend Pinckney, how long did they keep you in solitary?
I was in there 7 days.
Okay.
Not bad days, because like I said, I had my young boys. See, when they can get other people to do things, especially we had porters and stuff, bring me potato chips and stuff like that. They bring in whatever they want, which was a good thing. But, you know, that's why, you see, when you got to have something of value to the young guys in order to get them to come into your corner. Because they thought it was the greatest thing in the world, because I even on Sunday morning, I had Sunday school at 9 o'clock. And my rule is this, I start at 9 o'clock. Be on time. If you're not on time, that's on you. And look, I had guys fighting over to get you. You can only have 16, you see. It's 4 at each table. That's all. You can't have 5 at the table. You can't have 6 at a table. You can only have 4 at each table. And these guys was fighting. They was actually fighting over a seat. And my rule was, it's first come, first serve. And if you're late, that's on you. That's not on me. That's on you. Because we moving on with or without you. And we have prayer at exactly 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, we start praying. Then we go, you know, then we'll go into our lesson. And I will give them the homework at that time about the Bible and different things. I give them the homework about the civil rights, and I kept these young boys. They was busy, here's the thing: they all wanted to do it.
Okay.
Only had one or two who really didn't, but he wanted to hang out with us. But they did their work, and I was proud of these people. I mean, you talking about proud? And it's funny, here's another thing. I'm going to talk about this. Then I'm going to let you can ask me some questions, because I know that some people want to know. We had a food boycott, protest. Let's call it a protest rather than a boycott. The food is so terrible. You got bugs in the food. You got worms in the food. You got maggots in the food. And if you tell them about it, they say, we're just giving you some extra meat today, you know, by the bugs. You know, they call that meat. And there's nothing you can do, because you can't, as a group, say anything. Because then they'd be saying that you inciting a riot. That's a key word in prison, inciting a riot. It could be for anything. You can be walking around saying hi Hitler and something like that. So they consider that starting a riot. Everything, if they consider it starting a riot, it's starting a riot, believe me, even if you had no intention of doing it or it didn't look like it would be possible. But anyway, we decided we're going to have a food protest. Now, we got these sex offenders. It's a lot. It's about 250 of them in one unit. And in order for it to be successful, I had to pull them in. And like I told the guys, they didn't want them to be involved. You know how black people will sometimes. If we don't like you, like I said, we're not going to work with you. And you know, I said, no, we're going to pull everybody in. We want everybody to be part of it. You know, it's all or none. That's how I told them. I said, it ain't no such thing as we're going to, because then it'll be a failure if we don't have everybody on the compound willing to work. So my job, more or less, go down there and talk to them and get them to think on our level. So I explained to them what we the main objective was. The main objective was to get better food for everybody. And the only way to do it was show some kind of rebellion inside the prison system and unity. See, that's what they don't like. And they don't like it in this country either. Unity is a weapon. It's like a secret weapon to us because we don't get it.
Okay.
Look, only 46 people showed up to eat at that chow hall. 46. We went out and collected over about 600 soups to give out to people. Every unit had to have a certain amount of soups. And we collected around 600, 700 soups to give out to people. You know, if you're hungry, we'll give you a soup and stuff like that. We'll make sure that nobody goes hungry, which was the main objective. We showed such unity. And the whole thing, everybody, their attitude changed on the whole compound. People came together like never before. White people, black people, because it was maybe 65% Caucasian, you know. And they came together. And black folks, and you know, you can see them walking together and stuff like never before. Even them child molesters, you know, even though they got the best thing, they had air conditioning, modern gym. They had everything that we didn't have. We didn't have no air conditioning, you know, and when it's hot, it's hot. That's all it is. Ain't nothing you can do. But they cut the air conditioning on down there. They go, they got a one of them universal gyms with the universal weights and everything, but they were willing to sacrifice. And they did. Every last one of them participated in the thing. It was such a success that the warden called me in there and wanted to talk. And he wanted to know what we wanted. I told him, absolutely, I don't know what you're talking about. And he wasn't going to trick me into saying that I want something or something. And then you locked up because they figured that I was behind everything because I'm the one who talked to the guy at News 10. I okay. told him, he kept saying, who's the leader? Who's the leader? Who's the leader of this? You got to have a leader. I said, no, sir. It's a whosoever will thing. And that was really got their attention. And from then on, the atmosphere, everything was 100% better. Even the guards, they was out to get me. They'd come in the room, cut the light on and off all night long and stuff like that. I didn't care. When you don't care about what they do, you can do anything you want. This is your kingdom. Long as you don't hurt me, long as you don't hit me, long as you don't do that, me and you cool. And they didn't like it, but I had formed a group, black and white folks, black and white people. They was down there. When you have a whole compound trying to protect you, you got something. Let's put it that way. And that's what they did. But on that note, we'll have a part two when I go into part two. Because I don't want to give the people too much. The first thing they said, well, that's just a little bit. But we'll go into part two later. But now you can ask me some questions if you wish.
Reverend Pinckney, listen, because I was filing the case when, during the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finally announced the verdict, they admitted, even on the news feeds, that they convicted you with no evidence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
Let's look at do you recall how many, because I know that you raised thousands of petitions. Do you recall how many petitions around about that you generated from all the people in the community?
Oh, we had over, I can't remember the number, but we only needed 385 signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And we had twice that amount, you see. So for them to claim that five or six signatures was forgery was almost ridiculous.
That was my point. Go ahead.
Yeah. The judge ruled that we had enough signatures to go ahead with the recall of him. And this really, and they got on that judge so bad that he resigned. Because, remember, they worked together. But he was a former hippie. And he decided, which was the correct decision, that we had more than enough signatures to recall petition. Let me say this. The mayor, during the next election, he lost by a landslide. I mean, the present mayor got three times more votes than this guy got. It was, I mean, it was, and Whirlpool was mad. And then this guy, he was caught in the closet having sex with a girl. And they gave him an early retirement. They didn't want to fire him, but he wasn't the mayor no more. He was the mayor, they wouldn't have did nothing. But by him not being the mayor, everything goes now. You know, ain't no such thing as you exempt from this and you exempt from that. But yeah, it's amazing. And when they said, now the prosecutor said, you really don't need evidence to convict him. And then the judge came behind him and said, whatever decision you make is final. I said, he must be out of his mind. I said, don't you know that, you know, we're going to appeal this if it don't need. And, you know, and so far it has been final. And even the Supreme Court, now listen to this. They don't want to hear nothing about not enough evidence. Only thing they want to hear was it's actually a crime. That 168.937 is a penalty. You can't try nobody on a penalty. You have to try them on the crime. And there is no such thing as forgery on a recall petition, because all you're doing is collecting signatures. If it's a bad signature, you cross it out. It's so simple. It's always been that way. But when it comes to Pinckney, we're going to charge him with forgery and send him to prison, which make no sense. But look, I'm healthier now than when I went in. And it's not because of their medical service. It's because I decided that I wasn't going to die in prison. I'm not going to die in prison. Like I said that over and over again. You can't kill me. I don't care what you're going to do. You can taser me. You can shoot me. And you can poison me. I'm not going to die. And God agrees. He said, my son is not going to die in prison. And can't got out of there. I feel good. My body feel good. I'm 68 years old, about to be 69, and ready to roll and ready to do what needs to be done. And I'm happy today. I'm happy that I can be an example for people, you know, and show these demons, you know, you don't scare me. See, most black people, I talked to a girl yesterday on the phone. Oh, you still doing? I heard you had a march on Tuesday. I said, yeah, I'm going to have one next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, too, if it's necessary. I said, well, so what? Oh, they, you know, you got to watch yourself. No, you better watch yourself. Don't worry about me, because it's obvious you don't care about me. So, but that's just to, you know, let people know that we can do things if we work together. And I'm telling you, we say we can't get to these young boys. All we need to do is have something they need and want or they want to do. You know, they play right into my hands. I taught them stuff that about history, about black history, that they would never, never, ever would have found out about it. It's just impossible because we don't care enough about black history and stuff like that. You don't even hear people talking about black history no more like they used to. But we got to tell these children. These are our children. And I try to instill in these young folks that we fight because most people don't have the courage to fight for themselves and their children. And you are children. You are my children. I told them that. You're my children now, you know. And when I said that, they probably saved my life. And if I was going to go outside the cell, I would always have 2-3 guys patrolling the area. And that was the beauty of this whole thing. I mean, when you talk about these guys have been known to plant knives on people. If a knife shows up in my control area, even without my fingerprints on it, it's mine. If some drugs showed up in my control area, it's mine. If anything that's illegal shows up, it's mine. Even cigarettes, you know, and knowing I never smoked a day in my life, it's mine. You know, so this is how we have to come together. And what these young guys showed me was that they are willing, if you have something and have a plan, don't deal with these young guys if you don't have a plan. You got to have a plan and execute your plan. You know, we got so many people who run around in circles trying to play both sides of the fence, and that's how they're not defeating you. They're defeating themselves, you know. And that's how I look at it. Like, I tell my wife all the time, and, you know, well, she said, well, you know, they don't like you. You don't have to like me. That's not even important to me. You know, if you know, most black folks, if you don't like somebody, you're not going to work with them. You're not going to do nothing with a person you don't like. You know, but that's the difference. We're at war. This is no conflict, you know. We got to be ready mentally, morally, and socially to deal with this stuff, because right now we're not prepared mentally to deal with it.
You know,
we can't do it.
You gave a perfect example of some of the people that are incarcerated in modern day slavery. That the problem is knowledge. You know, I quote a scripture out of the Bible that says our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. Most of our people behind those enemy lines are not there because of activism or what you were even there for. They're there because they're doing things out here in the street that they really don't. If they had any knowledge, they wouldn't be participating in a lot of the things that they're doing. Absolutely. It wasn't no surprise to me that the people some of our people in there started gravitating towards you because you were offering them knowledge about anything, whether it was about numbers, history, anything. You were giving them something that it was a void in their life. So you were a blessing to them even being there.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, drug dealers, we had a lot of drug dealers. And I was at this was a level 2 facility when I first got, I was going back and forth to court. And they put me in the control area with 4 killers. And all night long, they're sitting there talking about who they done killed, how they got away with killing somebody. And to me, if you done kill somebody, you ain't going to be bragging about how many people you killed and stuff like that. So one day, I woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they were talking about who they done killed, how many people they got away with killing, and all the kind of. And I asked them one question. I said, and the question was for all 4 of them. Now, y'all sit here and told me how many people you have killed. Did any of the people you killed have a gun, a knife, a weapon, or anything? That's the only question I want to ask. You know, they looked at stupid. They said, no. I said, then you're a coward. I said, you didn't have to kill them. You didn't have to kill them, but you killed them anyway. And went back to sleep. Oh, man. That was the beginning of something. That, I mean, it circulated all around the compound. People everywhere, you know, heard about that had happened. And then I became a movie star almost in on that compound too. So it's been quite a ride, Elliot.
You're in good spirits after, you know, this is the second time that they have put you in prison on trumped-up charges, and you spend a number of years there. You're in real good spirits, Reverend Pigney.
Well,
you're something else, man.
You know, let's face the facts. You can't cry over spilled milk. You got to keep moving. You see, if I came home all grouchy, this affects my wife too.
Okay.
This affects my children, the community. You know, and look, I don't care about you. Don't like me. I don't care, you know. We're gonna go back to back and fight these demons anyway. That's how we go. I deal with it. I don't care, and you could take that and run with it. That's what I tell them all the time. And this is what I was doing. I would walk around the prison, whatever prison they sent me to. I would holler out, "It's going down!" And and then look, those new correction officers were so nervous, they didn't know what to do. I saw the fear in the eyes. See, they feared me too. more than anything else. Because the one thing for sure, they knew that I probably got those folks together. Everywhere I went, I had an army of people. And I love saying, it's going down. And then I would drop a deuce on them, and I'd tell them, keep the change, you filthy animals, and you know, directing it towards the COs, you know. And it was like intimidating them, you know, more than anything. When I walked out of that prison, they were so happy I was gone. You don't know what to do. I mean, it got me, you know, you can't really leave until 8 o'clock, right? So it was around 7:30, 8 o'clock. Pinckney, pack it up. You're out of here. You go. I said, well, yeah, 7:30. It ain't time yet. I still got another half an hour. I said, I want to make a phone call. you can't make no phone calls here. You got to get out of here. I said, okay. I said, all right. You don't have to tell me twice.
Reverend Pinckney,
you know, but it was tremendous, man. I tell you, because it's the lesson I learned about my people on a level that I never saw my people act like that. I never saw my people disrespect senior citizens and stuff like that. I never saw that, you know. Even though I know it's going on out here now, but I never saw it. Nobody, like in Benton Harbor, yesterday we was at a garden opening, and, you know, the young guys around the community all came, you want to hug me and stuff like that, you know. And I never had to worry about these young guys disrespecting me till I got there. I'm trying to watch TV. These guys want to rap. I'm trying to read my Bible. These guys want to rap. I said, no, that don't make no sense to me. But it's first come, first serve. And, you know, they weren't doing nothing wrong. They were doing what they've been doing before I got there. That's what that was. But we have to, you know, we as older people, you know, have to get out here. Because right now, they got so many guns around here. Everybody got a gun. Everybody. You know, they dumping guns all in the community. And these young guys got, reason unknown, a gun make you tough. You know, it makes a coward tough. That's what it does. And that's how I look at it. You, in my eyesight, if you shoot somebody who don't have a gun, you're a coward. That's what I look at. And it is what it is, you know.
Richard.
You know, I want to congratulate you, Reverend Pinckney, for your spirit. And I'm glad that on Time for Awakening and, you know, between the communication you and Elliot had, you're able to project out to our audience and, you know, all over the country. This is the kind of spirit that we need to have. That's the lesson I'm taking from you at this moment. Because I was going to raise the question, and you were kind of answering the question I was going to raise with you about leadership. And it sounds like the experience that you shared with us, it wasn't just what happened in prison that these young men were identifying with. It's what you did as a leader in the community and came to prison was the reason why they recognize your value. You, and what I took away is you said that we have to give them something of value, right? And so I'll ask that as a question because I think it's really important, maybe just for me, but for the community at large. What do you see the things a leader like yourself need to be able to project in our community to gain the type of respect that you experience amongst those young men in prison?
Well, one of the things, you have to be righteous in what you're doing. You cannot go out there and be like most guys. They be lying, telling I was a big time dope dealer. I was this. You just tell the truth, and you know, and they will come. You know, you have an obligation to yourself and to them. You know, and tell them be sincere. You know, a lot of times you got a lot of people like the minister. You got 90% of the ministers that's ministering to people today is not sincere. They doing it for a different reason, money, to put them into a different location. See, you got to do things that is right. You know, the number one thing that you want to do, just do things because it's right to do. It's the right thing to do. And I don't do things for money. You see, that's the difference between me and most people. I'm not the type to have to live in a luxury. I have a nice home, a couple of nice cars, but these are older cars, you know, and I ain't mad at nobody. You see what I'm saying? And my wife, she likes nicer things, but, hey, she willing to sacrifice. And we sacrifice for the community, you know. I could have got me $50,000 every year, you know, if I was that type, if I was willing to sell my soul to the devil. And I'm just not that type of guy. Money have never fascinated me, you know. As long as I got enough money to eat and sleep with a roof over my head and a car to just get me from A to B and sometimes C, I'm good. You see? And that's what you have to project to these kids, you know. And, see, they like to glorify nice cars and stuff like that. I tell them in a minute, why would you give somebody your money? You got to pay $300 a month for a car note to get the A, B, and C, when you can get the A, B, and C on a car you already got paid for. That don't make no sense to me, you know. But we, as black people, we judge people on what they got, you see, on how they look. If you got, he got a Cadillac, he got a Lexus, you know, he got it going on. No, that doesn't make you. See, if what's in your heart, that's what counts. If it's in the heart, you can do anything. And we, as black people, we got to change the way we do business. We got to change and stop all this stuff. I don't like him. He walked funny, you know. He talked funny, you know. You know, he said this about me 10 years ago. I'm still mad at him. Stop it. That's all you need to do. Just stop it. You know,
another thing that came to mind as you were communicating to us was the point, because we're hearing a lot of this around the shootings that are going on in the community. And since you've been organizing within the young people within the prison system, I take it you've been hearing about not just the killing of young men and women, but these juries. And it was surprising to me to hear. Not surprising, but it's interesting to hear this jury that was put together, because Reverend Pinckney, how do you see this about these jurors? Where do they get these people from? I mean,
here's what we're missing. I remember those guys that blew up the church and killed those four little girls, and these guys were going around bragging about it, and they said, there's not a white jury in this world will find us guilty. But you can find a white jury to find a black person guilty even if he didn't do it. And each time a white person did something, they echoed that. And this is what they do. They protect their own. See, with the... the system is not designed for us. It's designed for them. Fairness, they get fairness. We don't. But the problem is, we don't holler and scream about it. You get a handful of people hollering and screaming about it, and they can pick them off one at a time. See, there's power in numbers. And we have to learn that, because right now, we don't even know which way is up. You know, we all we do is sit around and complain, and we complain to each other. And we're not going to bust a grape. And we're the busiest people there is in the whole wide world. I don't think there's nobody busier than black folks. I don't think so. And we ain't busting a grape.
So it's just we're going around in circles. And
just going around in circles.
And not going nowhere.
Let me tell you, the shameful part of this thing is we really think we got it going on. I mean, you talk to somebody and they, oh, man, I got it going on, you know. You ain't got it going on. If your neighbor is in trouble, you in trouble. You know, if your neighbor is starving, you starving. That's what we got to institute into our people. We got to change the way we do business. And all this hatred of each other. That's how these killers. How do you go kill somebody, or do a drive-by shooting, killing up people on the porch that you don't even know? I mean, how do you do it? To me, It's a no-brainer. You know, you want to be big in the community. You ain't going to be big in the community killing people you don't know. It don't make no sense.
And then be locked up, and the only person you could talk to is the people who supposedly did the same thing you did.
Absolutely. You'd be surrounded by them. And that's what I'm talking about. See, they put me in there with these four killers. And you know what they every night the conversation was the same thing until 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I just woke up and just to ask them a simple question, and it rocked that whole prison because it spread it like wildfire. Because probably 30% of them probably shot somebody who didn't have a gun, but they was in full support of me. They was in support. When I said support, I mean exactly that. They was in support of me. In cold water on that different level with the most of the people not going home. That was the best prison I ever been in. They never did. I didn't have to want for nothing. Whatever I needed, they had it. And because I couldn't eat the food out the cafeteria. In my 30 months there, I never ate out of that chow hall. Never. And that was the most incredible thing. Because every day at noon, I used to eat one good meal a day, and that's what I ate. And it kept me healthy. And now I'm pretty much like that now. You know, but I'm getting there. And, you know, my good friend Robert McKay, he really, really, really came through for me. And I appreciate him. You don't get, especially us, man. You know, mostly white folks was really, really the ones who really was supporting me and food-wise and stuff. But Robert stepped up big. He, whatever I needed, anything I asked him to do or whatever it was, he didn't even hesitate. I mean, I didn't even have to argue, debate with him. You know, you ask a black person to do something, they want to argue with you first about it. You know, they're going to argue with you, tell you 10 reasons why you shouldn't do this and do that. Hey, listen, man, just do what I ask. That's all I need you to do. But with Robert, he was right there, man. He's a real good brother, man. We got to change, man. There need to be more brothers like him. And look, you know, even on your show, you know, you got to tell these people, man, stop all this nonsense, you know. You know, we 50 million strong, but it's like we 5-6 million the way they got us. You know, we 50 million strong. You know, we like a small group. Even the Mexicans and stuff have propelled themselves above us now. You know, that's because of all this nonsense we be doing. And here's another thing. Now, remember the Native Americans now, how they slaughtered millions and millions of them and got them from one location to another location. The Native Americans would rather be with white folks than they do black folks. My mind couldn't compute that. I said, are you serious? You hanging around them white guys. These guys, look. I said, okay. I couldn't believe it because that didn't faze me. You know, they always talking about the white men speak with a forked tongue and all this kind of stuff. Well, why you want to hang with them? That's my thing. Then you have black folks want to hang with white folks like that. I said, what is y'all doing? You know? But my thing was unity. Not like that, but on togetherness. You know, when we have an issue and stuff like that, not kissing their butts to be their friends and stuff like that. You're on the same level they're on, you know. And that's how I look at it, you know. Ain't no big ass and little U's, you know. So we learn, you know. And we have to continue doing this, Elliot. We got to make sure it's about our children, man. That's where we drop the ball at. It's all about our children. It ain't about Reverend Pinckney. It ain't about my wife, Dorothy Pinckney. It's about our children and their children. And I want them to know that in order to make this thing happen, we got to work together. We got to find a way to work this thing so people can understand how important it is to work together and stop all this hatred that we have for each other. You know, if you can't help me, then, hey, go on about your business. That's how I look at it. If I can't help you, and you tell me you don't like me, why don't you like me? If you don't want to tell me, that's fine, too. But the point is, we got to do things. We got to do things differently. And on that note, Ellie, you know, you got some questions, shoot them.
If I can, go ahead, Richard. If I can ask one more question, Reverend, you know, because I wanted to say also, as you were letting us know your experience in prison and the the success you had with young people, it brought to mind the Soledad Brothers and Jonathan Jackson in the sense of organizing. Because what I heard you say is that by your good works, those young people identified with you, and you were with that success of that, what you called it, the food boycott?
Yeah, the food protest.
Protest.
We won't call it a boycott. We call it a protest.
Protest. The food protest, you were able to galvanize, which changed the mood of the whole prison population in general, you know, which probably was why those CEOs were fearful of you. The question, I want to go back to the corporations, because I think we need to understand the power of that when you were talking about Whirlpool. Y'all were only asking for income tax from a corporation, right?
Right.
And this, what from just asking them to do what a corporation should do, what we got to see out of your experience, that they had the mayor, they had the judge, they had the jury, they had everybody, so they just wouldn't pay to what they should have been paying all along.
Absolutely.
Seems to me that's what we need to understand, the power these corporations have.
But we give them power. See, one of the things that like I told them, Whirlpool just built a new headquarters in Benton Harbor. They always were threatening to move. If you want us to pay taxes, we'll move. And the black people, they didn't understand that, you know, that if you're not paying taxes anyway, what benefit would you have? I mean, what's our benefit? You know, you don't pay your water bill. We losing millions of dollars in water resources because you won't pay your bill. But let me tell you the power of the Whirlpool Corporation. The vice president of Whirlpool, Jeff Knowles, his son had committed at least, he had a whole sheet of felonies on the thing and three misdemeanor charges. They kicked everybody out of the courtroom. Everybody, including me. They kicked me out too. I didn't like it. But I said, well, I'm not going to fight this one. I just waited outside. I already saw the charges up there. And everybody, the judge, the prosecutor, I don't even think the guy had the little young punk, that's what I'm going to call him, I don't even think the little young punk even had an attorney. He went in there with his daddy, came out with a 90-day misdemeanor charge that would be expunged for his record. All the other charges were dismissed. Felonies and everything. I'm talking about 10 felonies at least. It could have been more than that because it was a whole sheet and some on him. I didn't really count them, but it shows the power of Whirlpool Corporation. They control judges, they control everything, and the people don't say that. I wrote about that. About the kid going there and how this guy could go in the courtroom and dictate to what can be done. Anytime a corporation doesn't pay taxes, they're worthless in your community. And here's the thing: they don't even hire people from Benton Harbor. If you're going to get a job here, you have to live in St. Joseph, Michigan. You have to live in Coloma. You have to live in Waterville Leak. You cannot live in Benton Harbor and work for Whirlpool Corporation.
Those other areas are white areas.
All white areas.
But
if you just so happen to be black and can sneak in these areas and then go apply for a job with Whirlpool, you got a good chance of getting a job then. Because they don't want nobody from Benton Harbor. Because if you get a job there, they hire somebody from Benton Harbor, that means that he's going to stay, and we're trying to drive you out of here.
Two things, because we got some callers waiting. Two things I want to mention before I go right to the phones briefly. You talked, Reverend Pinckney, about the power that Whirlpool wields in city government there in Benton Harbor and in Michigan in particular. But we can see the power of Whirlpool by the way you ran afoul of them, so to speak. Because at the time when you first started speaking against Whirlpool, you were the president of the NAACP there.
That is correct.
They made sure when they pulled the rug out from under you and you and they took the presidency or forced you out, they thought that would silence you, and it didn't. So, you know, we could see that their plans didn't work, because that after they took the presidency from you, they put you in jail the first time. When you got out, you were right back on the grind. Now you've been incarcerated again, and you're right back on the grind again. I just want to say that the Black Autonomy Network, and this is something that I want you to talk about after I go to these calls, but I'm going to just say it now, and then we'll go to the calls. The Black Autonomy Network was started by you.
It was actually started by my wife.
Okay. It started by Mrs. Pinckney,
right,
because of the murder.
She's the throne right there.
Okay.
It was started, you know, it was her work, her idea and stuff like that, and her and a group of ladies got together, and that's how it all began, and then it blossomed into something really big.
Well, one of the reasons it was started was because of the murder of the young man that was on the motorcycle by police.
Right, absolutely, sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to go to the calls, but I want you to kind of reflect on, because that was quite a while ago when you started the organization.
2003.
And
it actually started really in 1999, but it didn't grow wings until 2003.
And we can see that since then, these murders by police have been off the hook, and the community is almost at a wit's end to what to do about it, because the politicians, our Black politicians, don't seem to do anything to stem this tide. But before we talk about that, because I want to go into that, let's go to some of these phone calls. Let's go to 919, area code 919. 919? 919, area code.
I'm just listening.
Okay, let's put it back on hold. Let's go to the D.C. area. D.C. area? Washington, D.C. Let's put her back on hold. Reverend Pinckney, talk about these police killings. And since you've been incarcerated, it's been a lot of prominent ones that has happened. Let's take this call. 267, 267 error code. What's your name? Where you calling from? We lost that one. Okay, Reverend Pinckney.
Well, anyway,
go ahead.
It's the murder started a little bit before that. Guys, and here's the thing that people need to know. There have been six people, young people, found in the river here. We got Lake Michigan right here, and a little area where you can dock your boats. We have six people. And here's the kicker. The last person, each one, well, I ain't going to say each one. Let's say four of them, the last was a police officer. And they ended up in the water. And one guy even had his ponytail cut off. One guy even had his penis cut off. And they ruled it justifiable homicide. Oh, accidental, I'm sorry. And and just recently, another body just appeared. The guy had just got out of jail, walking home across the bridge. Last person they talked to was a police officer, and he ended up in the river. And no foul play, according to them. And this has been going on and on and on. And then they had a young man named Martell Hatley. They found him hung in his cell. Claimed it was suicide. But the coroner office said he was tasered, then hung. That's how that happened. But yet and still, Black people, we don't get mad unless it's actually our family. Then we get mad. We get mad look, this is what they want to do. If it's their family, they want you to drop everything you're doing. Even if you go to a funeral, they want you to don't go to that funeral. I want you to come in. I want you to take care of my son, and they won't march. They won't do nothing. They won't even read your newspaper. That's how we as black folks are. And we accept it. You know, one of the things I always did, it ain't important what that person does, what I do. I figure if you need help, I have an obligation to help you. That's how I feel. And a lot of people, like my wife never said, well, we can't help people who's not going to be parked because what it does, it weakens us, you know, because people will come knowing that they don't have to put no work in. Perfect example, there was two white guys always, look, they have a long history of pulling their guns on black people and shooting at them, but they always miss. One black guy was cutting through this area. The white guys pulled the gun on him. He pulled his gun and shot one of them, killed him, charged him with open murder. Now, his family is simple. Every time that my wife or somebody in them have a protest, they won't come out for a moment. But yet they won't, when I got home, they said, well, they want you, they want to get it. No, you're not going to get in touch with me. You had your opportunity. You had your opportunity to just come out one day. All they do, they stand out there for 1 hour and protest. And this family got a loved one that's in prison, and he's never going to see daylight because y'all all stuck up, don't want to do nothing, too intimidated to stand up to the police and law enforcement. That's what we go through with this stuff here. We go through, and it's us. We don't get it. Until we get it, things are not going to change. You got to put the miles in. You got to stand up for you. Don't do it for yourself. Do it for your loved ones. And until we able to get that through our thick head, things going to continue like this. They shooting us at will. You can get pulled over on your way home and get shot. It's justifiable homicide. We protest. We run fast. But we don't run long. You know how they say like a quarter horse. They can only run a quarter of a mile. You see, the distance is a mile long. But a quarter horse can only run a quarter of a mile. So this is how we are. We only tough when it comes to each other. When it comes to that shoes that stuck up in our butt, we don't say a mumbling word. So it's time that we move to a whole different level, and we need to do it immediately.
You know, Elliot, if I can, before you go, was the young people in prison, are they aware of these here deaths that are occurring while they're in by police officers, or did you get any sense from them about that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What it did to them is it intimidated them more than anything else. They were scared, you know, and that's why some of them now shoot first. You know, well, you're going to get me anyway. Yeah, but, you know, one of the things that I didn't like, they be showing these movies like, you know, guys got the AK-47s. And, you know, and they used to, you know, that was a big deal to them. But like I told them, why? Why would you need a gun like that? I said, you don't need a gun, period. He said, well, everybody else got one. I said, that's a good answer. But if you got one, you get mad at somebody, you're going to shoot somebody and end up right back in here. You don't want to eat this food. You don't want to have to put up. Look, they did 16 counts. 16 times you had to be on your bunk. 16, I mean, you a grown man. I'm 68 years old. When it comes to count time, I better be on my bunk. You know? And what kind of, you know, what kind of person, I mean, there's no such thing as respect for your elders and stuff like that, not with the COs, not with the prisoners. They don't do that no more. They used to do that. But we got to change the way these young folks are thinking. And I think the way to do it is got to find something. I'm not going to sit there and listen to rap music. If that's the only way to get to you, I'm not going to deal with that. You know, you're going to have to come to my side. If you want me to educate you, I'll do that. You know, you want to know something, I'll do that. If you want me to fight for you, I'll fight for you. But I'm not going to sit up there and I'm not going to do it. That don't mean that you shouldn't do it. Because you might have a different appetite. You see, I'm just not going to do it, and I don't want to tell nobody to do something that I wouldn't do.
Reverend Pinckney, I think that one of the solutions, and we didn't have folks on the program talking about it. I think one of the solutions, especially now in the environment that we're living in, and it really hasn't changed since we've been here, but one of the solutions is our people learning, especially in states where it's open carry, learning how to use guns safely, sensibly, so we can develop groups, forces, or patrols where we can protect our community. And I'm not talking about aggressively going after and firing at police. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about monitoring these police, protecting the community, and also being a marshal, so to speak, of our own communities. You know, it reminds me of when I first met you, you put me in touch with Cola Clark, if you remember.
Yeah.
Cola Clark was Mega Evers' secretary.
That's right.
And she told me on the air that Mega left that meeting. She said that she was supposed to ride home with him. But her father, or either her father or her brother, came to pick her up. Mega drove home, and he was murdered. She said right after that that her parents, all the people in the community, gathered together with weapons because they didn't know what was going to happen after they had murdered Mega in his driveway. But she said that the neighborhood was prepared to defend itself. And I didn't forget what she said, because even then, talking about the situation that happened with Mega, who she had a lot of respect for, she worked for him as his secretary. She said that the neighborhood was ready to defend itself. And I think that's what it's there now. I'm not saying it's headed in that direction. It's here now. Our people, we picking up guns, using them on one another over stupid beefs and all that old dumb stuff. Our people need to learn to use these weapons safely, not turn them to the side, not do all the stuff you see on television. Learn how to use these weapons safely so we can just start patrolling and defending our own communities. Let me go. Let me take a couple of these calls. 602 area code, 602.
Yes, brothers. Good evening. Mrs. Brother Marcus from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Good evening, brothers. And good evening, Mr. Pinckney. I would like to ask Mr. Pinckney's opinion, being that he's been a gentleman in the trenches, and you know, he says 68 years, so he has ample experience. And I would like to ask, as a solution, Reverend Pinckney, what are your thoughts about Marcus Garvey's program? What are your, what do you think about implementing a Garvey program at this stage? And I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
All right. Well, you know, Marcus Garvey, he was an organizer. And I love his work. Matter of fact, I'm a fan of Marcus Garvey. I love that man. And I love anybody who's willing to stand up and execute. What he did, he executed. And when you have a plan, you got to execute your plan. And he has. You know, sometimes we have to do more, you see. And a lot of times it's what other people do that's important too, but what's more important is what you do. And I'm going to say this, and we can move on. I love Marcus Garvey, and I believe that he is one of the greatest organizers that I have ever met. I didn't meet, but no.
Let's go to 646, error code 646. 646.
Yes, brother. It's Brother Jay.
How are you, sir?
Reverend Pinckney, I'm glad to see that you was able to make it home. One of my questions to you is Maytag at this time paying taxes, or are they still not paying taxes?
They're not paying. Whirlpool is the main corporation. Maytag is just a subsidiary of Whirlpool, but it's owned by Whirlpool. They pay no taxes, none, not here in the city of Benton Harbor. And here's the other part. They don't even hire black people that live in 49022 zip code. They won't do it. You know,
so has anybody talked about taking a class action discrimination lawsuit against them, or is that just something because they control the courts and everything that, you know, just won't happen? Because, I mean, now that I know this information, I will never ever purchase another product by Maytag or Whirlpool. You know, because that's the type of economic stance that we as a people must take. But no, I'm totally surprised that you know, they don't pay any tax. And you know, it just goes to show that, you know, these white folks do whatever they want to. Just alone with your court case was a travesty. And you know, Where was the Al Sharpton, the Jesse Jackson, and the rest of those pork chop chicken eaters at?
Well, one of the things that Jesse came here when we had the uprising in 2003, and he went straight to Whirlpool and negotiated. We don't know how much he was paid or anything like that, because we weren't involved in the negotiation. But he came and tried to re-steer us into another direction. We were strong after the doing the uprising in 2003, and he tried to come in and do and steer us in a whole different direction. We wasn't going for that, and Jesse never came back here. He came back one other time when he thought with the emergency manager issue that came out. That's when the government put in a person of his choice over the elected officials. Remember, he had the power to even fire the mayor. And at that time, we had a pretty decent mayor. And he took his desk and put it in the basement. But it goes on like that. But the key to Whirlpool, we're trying to put this income tax in. If we can put that income tax, that'll answer most of our tax problems, money problems. And I initiated back in, I would say, 2012, 2013. And it was defeated because they told the people it was coming out of their check, but people don't work in Benton Harbor. They don't pay income tax in Benton Harbor. They don't have to pay. It's only for the people who work and don't live in the city of Benton Harbor. It was a beautiful plan. But, you know, you're dealing with someone who got 20, 30 lawyers or more, and you got to be prepared mentally to deal with them because they always can pull a rabbit out of the hat.
Okay, so my last question to you is, where do you go from here? What is your agenda to move forward for Benton Harbor? Are you going to go at them again, or are you just going to try and put some sort of plans together for the community?
Well, there's two things. One thing, we're definitely going after Whirlpool. That is, we just had a big protest on Tuesday in front of the headquarters of Whirlpool and the Barron County Courthouse. But we're trying to execute a plan. We want to force them through the income tax where they can't get around that to pay the taxes, because they have an obligation to deduct that money out of each one of their employees' checks and turn it over to the city of Benton Harbor. So that's one thing that we're working on. And since I've been home, I'm trying to persuade everybody that now we need to sit down at the table among ourselves and just come up with a plan. Because one thing about black people, we don't plan to fail. You know, we just fail to plan. And that's how these things come about. So we got to change the way we do business and come together and stop all this hating on each other. You know, if you don't like me, you don't work with me. That don't make sense, especially when we got the same common goal. So on that note, that's, you know, that's my answer for you.
Reverend Pinckney,
hey,
Jay, stay with us a second. Reverend Pinckney,
right.
I lost my train. You mentioned that after the young man was murdered by the police in 2003, and the uprising started, that Jesse Jackson came there and approached Whirlpool.
Yeah, went straight to Whirlpool.
And evidently it was something transpired because he left and you never heard from him again.
Well, here's what he did. His job was to redirect our thinking. Because we were in a very hostile situation, but what I wanted to do was calm them down. And we had to be nonviolent because they brought the National Guard in, and they were patrolling the area.
Okay.
And so they was more or less prepared for us, but we wanted to be peaceful to show them that we wasn't going. We had the ears and the eyes of all the media, you know, and they was listening. And once you get that much attention, here come Jesse and Al. You know, they coming. So you gotta brace yourself for them. And they know where to go. They know to go straight to Whirlpool headquarters, pick up their little money, and then try to redirect everybody in a different direction.
Now Whirlpool gentrified the black area. Put the Jack Nicklaus Championship Golf Course there, forced people out, and they, as you told Jay, they don't pay any taxes. Now, do they give St. John, which is the twin city, St. Joseph's, the twin city of Benton Harbor, which is 98% white, do they give them any type of financial benefits? What?
You know what? I'm not privileged to that information. I don't really know, but I'm pretty sure they do.
But they hire from St. Joseph.
They hire their residents and stuff like that. I can't say what they do in St. Joe because they don't even talk to us. You know, if you in Benton Harbor, you go to St. Joe, they look at you like you're strange and stuff like that. But one of the things, I got about over 50 letters from people that lived in St. Joe. Apologizing, telling me how sorry they was that I got convicted. All white people is not like this. Like I told you earlier, 67% of the white people that live in Barron County are liars, racist, and corrupt. That, you know, this is a letter I received. And, you know, 33% of my good people. And this tells the story of how they react to us. But our problem, we want to be just like these people. You see, black folks try to act just like white folks. And that's what they do. They want to be, you know, whatever they do, that's what black folks be trying to do. You know, why would you want to be like the devil, you know?
Now the one other thing, because I want to get Mr. McKay in. Mr. McKay, you with us?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Mr. McKay, because the caller, Jay, from New York City, asked about Sharpton and them being involved. Maybe you can let Brother Jay know the times that you communicated with Sharpton in reference to Reverend Pinckney and what happened.
I'm familiar with Jay's voice. Jay calls into Chicago on WVON. Is Jay still on the line?
Yes, he's with us. Jay?
Yeah, I haven't heard of him in a long time.
Jay, turn your volume down too a little bit.
You got calling in on WVON.
Yeah, I recognize your voice, Mr. McKay.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah. You asked about Sharpton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I called Al Sharpton's show 6 times regarding Reverend Pinckney's issue. Because the first time I called, I was listening in. He said, "We're looking for marathon activists." I said, "Oh, this is a great opportunity." So I called in. I spoke with him. I told him that Reverend Pinckney over in Benton Harbor, Michigan, was a marathon activist who had just recently been incarcerated for fighting for justice, for human rights in Berrien County, Michigan. And he said he put me on hold. I gave his screen and my number. Never heard from him. Called again, up to 6 times. Just recently, is regarding Reverend Pinckney was being released, and still no response. Reverend Pinckney, I didn't tell Reverend Pinckney, and I told Dorothy Pinckney because I didn't want to put too much information over the phone lines to the prison because they screen everything. And you say the wrong thing, they can get him from inciting or creating some kind of uprising in the prison. So much of the information I had, I couldn't tell him over the phone when I spoke to him in the prison. But I called in on Jesse Jackson's show. He has a show that comes on Sunday morning here, Keep Hope Alive. and I've called his show at least six times. I've called the other shows. So, no, as he stated, they come here, they went to Michigan, received their payout, and they're happy, and they're gone. They only show up and they chase them out of Ferguson, Missouri, when Michael Brown was murdered by the cop there. And they've done it here in Chicago. So they are ineffective. They're only effective in lining their pockets. And you can tell the difference.
You know, the bottom, that's why I had asked, because I think I may have heard you when you called up about Pinckney, because that's where I think I first became aware of him. But, you know, I'm in New York, man. I've known Sharpton for 20, 25, 30 years, man. I mean, his game, yeah. The only thing that changed about Sharpton is he done lost a lot of weight. And, you know, they all get paid. You know what I mean? I mean, even, you know, I remember at one time, I'll give you a perfect example of Sharpton and how he worked. At one time, they had a guy from your city that was a radio host. He was becoming pretty popular, doing real good. Warren Valentine. And old Sharpton was his boy. He was big up Warren. That's where I had met Warren in New York when Warren came to Sharpton's convention. I got the opportunity to meet Warren there. And, you know, as soon as Warren got caught up in his legal mess, he never heard from Sharpton again. He never heard from none of them individuals. None of them never came to, you know, see if he was all right to offer or anything. And, you know, the bottom line is we all know that because of our movement and our struggle, they both become very rich men. You know, we don't like to be honest and talk about it, but their activism has led them to become very rich men. So when Pinckney says that, you know, Jesse came there to get his money, you know, it's just unfortunate he couldn't probably get a dealership or anything like he did with Budweiser back in the day that led to him being a very rich man. Because I've never known a Negro that have a job since I've known him. You know what I'm saying? And the funny thing is, most people don't know. You know, they always talk about Crazy Jonathan and then the other son and all of that. But it's his son, Yusuf, who is under the tutelage of his crooked brother that's really the head of the Jesse Jackson financial money firm, the son, Yusuf. And you never see Yusuf. You never hear about Yusuf or anything, but he's the one who's running the show. But, you know, like I said, I'm glad, Reverend Pinckney, you're out. I'm grateful that, Reverend Pinckney, you're able to move forward. And you know what the beautiful thing is, Reverend Pinckney, from listening to you, you know who your friends are, and you know who your enemies are, and you're just going to continuously do the work, and you're not chasing after the Sharpton's and the Jesse's. You want the people to be there. So I'm really happy to hear everything that you're doing. And, you know, whenever I can make a donation, I will definitely make a donation to what you're trying to do, because you're doing it the right way.
That's right. Thank you.
And God bless you.
Thanks for your call, Brother Jay.
Have a good night, brother.
Let's go to 267. 267. 267.
Brother Elliot?
Yes.
I thought you were saying two, because I'm on the 215.
Okay, okay.
But that's okay. That's good, though. Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, my brother?
Great.
Hey, Brother Rich and Brother McKay and Reverend Pinckney, how you doing, good brother? How are you?
Good, brother. Good.
All praises be. Yes. Reverend Pinckney, I'm going to say it's an honor to talk to you. Like, you know, just like Brother Elliot said at the beginning, it's an honor to talk to you. I just feel overwhelmed even being able to speak to you tonight. But I was, you know, praying to Almighty God a lot for your freedom, and I'm glad your freedom was finally granted and stuff. And, you know, Reverend Pinckney, just like Brother Jay said before me, you know, you're a brother that's doing it from the heart. You're not doing it for publicity. You're not doing it for the accolades or the white media or anybody. You're doing it for the love of your people, man. You're a treasure, Reverend Pinckney. You paid the ultimate sacrifice. You know, you was incarcerated for standing up for what's right, which many black men and women in this country have paid the ultimate price for standing up. And I didn't say you're an inspiration to me, an inspiration to all black people and righteous thinking people in this country, Reverend Pinckney. You just keep doing what you're doing, man, because we will be victorious as a people, as Brother Elliott always say, we will be victorious in the end, man. And I just know we will be victorious, Reverend Pinckney. And don't let nothing stop you. Don't let no obstacles in your path. You know, in regards to what the Jesse, I'll do this, shenanigans and stuff. They're gonna pay for that down the line anyway. They're gonna be caught on account for their bad behavior and stuff. If the stuff they're doing, but you, Reverend Pinckney, you keep doing what you're doing because, as the old saying goes, one doesn't have to condemn a dirty glass. You just lay a clean glass up beside it.
That's right. That's right. See,
you know what I'm saying? And
like
that's real.
All right, my brother. Appreciate it.
So thank you, Reverend Pinckney, and thanks, Brother Allen, Brother Richie, and Brother McKay. You keep doing a good work up in Chicago, and I'll listen for the rest of the show, Brother Elliott.
All right.
Thank you,
brother. Reverend Pinckney, I'm going to shift gears a little bit to talk about, because since you've been in the information really broke loose about what happened in Flint. And just before you were incarcerated, you put me in touch with Miss Maureen Taylor. In fact, that was the last conversation I had with you on the regular phone when you put me in touch with Miss Taylor. And we talked about, because that's when the news started breaking about the poisoning of the Flint water system and what she was doing. Since then, and since you had been incarcerated, the news had come out about other cities that are similar or in similar situations to Flint. And it's kind of ironic, and maybe not ironic to conscious black people listening, that a lot of these areas are in trouble, are located in a lot of cities where it's populated by black people. That these water supplies, the pipes are full of lead, and the water supplies are in bad shape. Talk about that situation there in Flint, because you're in Michigan, and that the test case for all these emergency managers happened in Michigan, because I know that they want to adopt that all over the country by disbanding the local governments and putting in charge emergency managers. Talk about that situation in Flint and how it relates to our struggle.
Oh, this is very, very important because one of the things that people don't quite understand is that, let me say this, the mayor is a good person in Flint, and they're trying to recall her now. The reason why they're trying to recall her, Flint has received $500 million, but they haven't got it yet. People think that she already got the money, and they're going to redo the pipeline. But the problem is, all these white companies is coming in, and they want that money, and she's trying to get black people to be able to get some of the money.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to cut you, but I read a report that she has lined up a couple of black construction firms to be to replace those pipes.
Yeah,
so now they're trying to get her. Go ahead.
Now the governor don't like that because they don't want to see black people in control of that. See, the $500 million is just the tip of the iceberg. They're gonna receive it. So they don't want no black person over that much money. And as far as the water is concerned, they knew the water was contaminated. They knew it, and they did nothing about it. We got a habit or a history of not caring unless it affects us directly. And it affected the people in Flint directly, and they did very little to stand up. Now the governor had paid a black person to recall the mayor, and so they can put their person in there and get control of that money.
Everything they do is about money. And like I said, we can be bought and sold. You know, very seldom do see, we got to get in a position where money is not everything. You know, you need money to survive, but is it worth selling out the future of your children? And we haven't learned that yet. You know, we still think that, it's all about us. I'll be able to get me a Cadillac or something on that level, which is a very naive thought. But that's how we do. You know, we want to be judged by how much we have, you know, rather than how much we do. And when you think about flooding that water, it's almost ridiculous. Matter of fact, Clara McClinton is a very good friend of mine. She's from Flint. You probably heard of her. She's going. She goes around speaking about the water and its condition. Matter of fact, I'm scheduled Saturday to be in Detroit, but unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to go there and talk about it this Saturday for the simple reason my children is coming from Chicago, so I'll be here with them. But I always want to make sure that anything that has to do with Flint, I want to be part of it. So Okay. Those of you who are out there, tell these people not to go along with the recall of the mayor.
You know, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join the conversation too, because we've got about 15 minutes left in the program. So you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation tonight with activist, organizer, and founder of the Black Autonomy Network, Reverend Edward Pinckney, and we also have Mr. Robert McKay with us on the line. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
No, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Today our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators, this is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy, it's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back Time for an Awakening. We're joining conversation this evening with activist, organizer, and founder of BANCO, Black Autonomy Network. Reverend Edward Pinckney is with us in conversation. Also, Mr. Robert McKay, who has been a good friend and an aide to Reverend Pinckney during his time of incarceration. Mr. McKay has helped on several occasions facilitate during Reverend Pinckney's difficulties, Reverend Pinckney being on the show. So I want to thank Mr. McKay for his efforts and his work, and along with Reverend Pinckney, my admiration for him is off the charts. Reverend Pinckney.
Just a
question in passing before I kind of let the listening audience know, because Jay asked about donating to BANCO and things of that nature. Before I let you give out all the information, Mr. Larry Pinckney, former Black Panther, I think he was the secretary of the Republic of New Africa, and he spent 12 years as a political prisoner. How's he doing? I haven't spoken with Brother Pinckney in a while. Have you heard from him since you've been released?
One of the things, I received an email from him just the other day, and he's doing quite well.
I got to reach out to him. It was a great show when he was on. He spent, we did the two-party. He spent a lot of time with us, and I've had an interesting conversation with him off the air, so I got to reach back out to him. I haven't talked to him in a while.
Very good. Very good.
Reverend Pinckney, before we go, give out any information. Because you told the listening audience that you're not stopping. You're going to be right out there in front of Barron County Courthouse and Whirlpool next week. But before I let you give out the information that you want to, Reverend Pinckney, I'm quite sure you're on probation.
Parole.
I don't want you to jeopardize yourself. You know, listen, you do a lot for the community, and you do a lot for the community there in Benton Harbor. But you have wife and family, and sometimes you have to kind of look at the situation. I don't want you to jeopardize yourself, because these people are out to get you, and you know it. So I just want you to be careful. I know you're not going to stop your activism and what you're doing. And to be honest, we need folks out there like you to do that. In fact, we need younger people to join you. But I just want you to kind of keep your eyes out, keep your ears peeled. I know that you do that anyway, but just be careful.
I got you. Amen.
Before you go, give out any information. Give out how the people can help BANCO and help your efforts there in your fight against Whirlpool. Oh, Reverend Pinckney, another thing. Because I know that after the NAACP cut ties with you, have their stance against you softened, especially after time has went by and they have looked at the situation? I know they were instructed by Whirlpool and some of their major contributors to cut ties with you. But I would think that after time has passed and they've looked and seen where they might have been used or played as dupes in a situation, that they have reached back out to you. Have any of that stance been softened by the NAACP?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely. I wouldn't expect them. They're a dying organization. And I think I may have helped.
Well, I guess that's enough said on that. Reverend Pinckney, give out any information how the people can help the efforts, how they can support BANCO and everything else.
Absolutely. You can go to BANCO, BANCO. Got a PayPal right there on the website. That's BANCO, BANCO.org, BHBANCO.org. Or you can mail a check to BANCO, BANCO, 1940 Union, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. That's BANCO, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. Or you can call me at 269-925-6000. 269-925-0001. That's 269-925-0001. And on that note, hey, I just want to thank you, Elliot, for having me. It's been a ball. Matter of fact, I enjoyed these 2 hours. It's been tremendous. And I take my hat off to the work you do. And I want to say to my good friend, Robert McKay, love you, man. Just keep moving, man. Don't stop. I use the term stick and move. Stick and move.
Stick and move.
That's right. And let them know it's going down. On that note, my brother, that's it.
Oh, boy. Reverend Pinckney.
Thank you.
Listen, I was happy to have you on. The door is always open to you, and you know that.
Yes.
But I want to talk to you about something, too, but we'll talk off the air. And, Reverend Pinckney, another thing before you leave, because I put out information about the Moratorium Now Coalition with a memo to Reverend Pinckney. If somebody – did I give out wrong information? If somebody writes a check or anything, does it still get to you?
No, it goes to Banco now. Straight to Banco.
Okay. All right. All right. I'll make sure I update that information and put back out the Banco information.
Absolutely. Straight to Banco.
All right. Well, Reverend Pinckney, listen, I want to thank you for being with us, and I'll be in touch with you soon.
Sounds good. My brother.
Mr. McKay.
Have a great night. All right now. All the losers.
Sure, what's up?
Okay. All right.
All right. Take care, sir.
Stick and move.
Been a pleasure.
All right.
My brother.
Peace. Richard, it was good to have Reverend Pinckney on with us. You know, his courage, man, is something to marvel at. You know, I don't know. And I'm just being honest, Richard. I don't know if I went through some of the things that he's went through, whether I would still be active in the fashion that he is.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I might still want to be behind the scenes and pushing other people. But he's not behind the scenes. He's right out there. And this is the second time that he spent a number of years in jail. This is the second time. It's not the first. It's the second time. Because when we had him on the program on Terrestrial Radio, he had just been released from the first time that he was in jail. So
it's a testament to the energy. You know, as I hear him and the way he was communicating to us and explaining, you know, you can feel or the drive that the passion and compassion that he exudes. And I think, again, you know, I was focusing on, you know, how those young people, and as I listened to the experience, it's obvious that they wasn't unaware of him. And that's like, that's so powerful and important when he said the whole thing of giving something of value. And as you said, what he's giving them is himself. You know, this is the example of what we should be doing in order to be, as in that clip you played with Dr. King, to be getting our manhood or to expressing our manhood in the manner that we should.
Well, listen, the struggle continues, Richard, and you know, we know what we have to do. That's why we try to utilize this program to showcase brothers and sisters out there that's in the struggle, to let people know nationally what they're doing, what they're fighting against, and if they need help, how we can help them. You know, we try to utilize this program to showcase that and always to talk about solutions at the end of it because, you know, we need solutions for our people. And it's all about the children, just like Reverend Pinckney said. It's all about the children.
Yes.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening and lively discussion. As always, before we leave again, I just want to reiterate to the listening audience there'll be some exciting new things coming down with Time for Awakening. And I kind of put a deadline on myself by at least the first of the month to try to let the listening audience know what's going on the first of August. We might have some exciting new things to talk about Time for Awakening. But we're still working at it, and once these things are solidified, the listening audience will be the second to know.
There you go.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country,